pull up a chair. I want to tell you about a woman who did something in 1936 that most pilots today, with all our glass cockpits and satellite weather and terrain databases, would still think twice about. And she did it in a Percival Vega Gull with a single 200-horsepower engine, no radio worth a damn, and weather so bad she could not see the ocean below her for most of the flight. I'm Tail Dragger, and this is the Hangar on Radio Hangar. And today we're talking about Beryl Markham. Now, before I get into the flight, let me tell you about the pilot, because this woman's story starts long before she ever touched a throttle. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight. First solo, private pilot, instrument rating, all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. Beryl was born in England in 1902, but her father hauled the family to British East Africa, what we now call Kenya, when she was just 4 years old. Her mother left, just packed up, and went back to England. So here's this little girl, growing up on a farm at the edge of the Great Rift Valley, running barefoot with Nandi children, learning to hunt with a spear before she ever learned to read properly. She spoke Swahili and Nandi before her English was anything to brag about. Her father trained racehorses, and Beryl grew up around animals that were fast and dangerous and beautiful. And I think that set something in her that never switched off. By the time she was 18, she had her own racehorse training license. First woman in Kenya to get one. She was good at it too. Her horses won. But the horses were not enough. See, Kenya in the 1920s and 30s was a frontier for aviation. Bush pilots were opening up East Africa the same way they were opening up Alaska. Beryl started flying with a man named Tom Campbell Black, one of the finest pilots in Africa, and she took to it like she had been born in a cockpit. She earned her commercial license, her B license as they called it, and started working as a bush pilot. Not hobby flying, working. She would scout elephant herds from the air for hunting safaris, fly mail and supplies into strips carved out of the bush, land on surfaces that would make a backcountry pilot in Idaho wince. She learned to read the African landscape from the air the way her Nandi friends read it from the ground. Now here's where it gets interesting. By 1936, the Atlantic had been crossed by air several times. Lindbergh did it westbound, New York to Paris, in 1927. Amelia Earhart flew it eastbound solo in 1932. But the westbound crossing, from Europe or Africa toward North America, that was a different animal entirely. And most people do not understand why. Think about it from a wind standpoint. The prevailing winds over the North Atlantic blow from west to east. That is why eastbound crossings were shorter, and relatively speaking, easier. Going westbound, you are fighting a headwind the entire way. Your ground speed drops, your fuel burn stays the same or gets worse. The math gets ugly fast. Every gallon of fuel you burn is a gallon you do not have for the miles still ahead of you, and those miles are longer because the wind is pushing you backward the whole time. Several pilots had tried the westbound solo crossing and failed. Some of them died trying. Jim Mollison made it in 32 but crashed on landing in New Brunswick. The ocean had a way of swallowing ambition. Beryl decided she would do it. Her airplane was a Percival Vega Gull, a low-wing monoplane with a single de Havilland Gypsy 6 engine putting out about 200 horsepower. It was a lovely little airplane, sleek for its time, with a cruise speed of maybe 150 miles per hour in clean air. The aircraft was modified with extra fuel tanks fitted into every available space. The registration was VPKCC, but she called it the Messenger. When they were done stuffing fuel into that airframe, it carried enough agas to give her roughly a 21-hour range. The crossing, depending on winds, would take somewhere around 20 to 22 hours. You see the margin she was working with. It was the kind of math that makes your palms sweat. On the evening of September 4, 1936, Beryl took off from Abingdon, England. It was late afternoon, around 7 in the evening, local time. She pointed the nose of the Messenger west toward the Atlantic and climbed into weather that was already turning sour. Now picture this. You're alone in a single-engine airplane over the North Atlantic. It is dark. There is no GPS. There is no weather radar. There is no autopilot worth the name. You have a compass, a watch, an airspeed indicator, and an altimeter. You have a chart on your knee and numbers you worked out on the ground, and below you is nothing but black water that will kill you in minutes if you go into it. The weather deteriorated almost immediately. She flew into cloud, thick, dark, soupy overcast that swallowed the stars and left her on instruments for hours. Ice started forming on the wings. 1936. No dacing boots, no heated pitot tube that you could trust. Just ice building on the leading edges, adding weight, changing the shape of the airfoil, slowly stealing her lift and her airspeed. She climbed to try to get above it. She descended to try to get below it. The ice kept coming. Hour after hour she sat in that cockpit, the engine droning, the darkness absolute. Nothing to see outside the windscreen, but the glow of her instruments reflected in cloud. She later wrote about it, and her description is one of the most honest things any pilot has ever put on paper. She talked about the loneliness of it. Not romantic loneliness. The kind of loneliness that sits on your chest and whispers that no one is coming if this engine quits. She had no way to check her winds aloft. No way to know if the headwinds were stronger than forecast or if she had drifted off course. She held her heading and trusted her numbers and kept that engine running. Somewhere past the halfway point, she would have passed the point of no return. The moment when you have burned enough fuel that turning back is no longer an option. After that, the only way out is forward. I have talked to ocean ferry pilots who describe crossing that invisible line, and every one of them says the same thing. The airplane feels different after that. It is the same airplane, the same engine, the same fuel flow. But you feel different because now the math only works in one direction. Beryl pushed on through the night. Dawn came somewhere over the western Atlantic and the weather began to break just enough for her to see the ocean below. Gray and cold and endless, but she was still flying, the engine was still running. And then after roughly 21 hours in the air, she saw land. It was Nova Scotia, Cape Breton Island. She had made it across, but the story does not end with a triumph. See, right about the time she crossed the coastline, the fuel ran out, that Gypsy 6 engine coughed, sputtered, and went silent. She was over a peat bog near a place called Balian Cove. She put the messenger down nose first into the bog. The airplane flipped. She hit her head. She was knocked unconscious. When fishermen found her, she was hanging upside down in the cockpit with blood running down her face from a gash on her forehead, but she was alive. She had flown solo, westbound, across the Atlantic, the first woman to do it. And one of only a handful of people who had ever done it in either direction. The flight covered roughly 3,600 miles in just under 21 hours and 25 minutes. Now here's the part of the story that always gets me. Beryl Markham did not become a household name the way Earhart did. Some of that is timing, some of it is the way history chooses its favorites. But in 1942, she published a book called West with the Night, and that book is, in my opinion, one of the finest pieces of aviation writing ever produced. Ernest Hemingway, who was not exactly generous with praise for other writers, read it and said, and I'm paraphrasing here, that he felt ashamed of himself as a writer, Hemingway, ashamed, because of how good Beryl Markham could write. She wrote about flying over Africa, about the silence of the bush at night seen from the air, about the way an airplane's shadow races across the ground below you like a thing with its own life. And she wrote about that Atlantic crossing with a clarity that puts you right there in the cockpit, smelling the engine oil and feeling the ice on the wings. The book went out of print for decades. It was rediscovered in the early 1980s and became a bestseller all over again. And every pilot I know who has read it says the same thing. It is the truest flying book they have ever held. After the Atlantic crossing, Beryl went back to Africa. She went back to training racehorses. She lived a complicated, messy, extraordinary life. She was married 3 times. She was broke more often than she was flush. She was not easy to know, and she did not care about being easy to know. She died in Kenya in 1986 at the age of 83. But that night over the Atlantic, alone in that Vega gull with ice on the wings and darkness in every direction, she proved something that every pilot understands in their bones. That flying is an act of faith. Faith in your training, faith in your machine, faith in the numbers you worked out on the ground before the wheels left the pavement. And sometimes, when everything else is stripped away, faith in yourself. Most of today's story comes from Beryl's own words in West with the Night and from Mary Lovell's biography, Straight On Till Morning, both of which I cannot recommend enough. You can find more about the show at RadioHangar.com. If you have never read West with the Night, do yourself a favor, find a copy, read it in one sitting. You will not put it down. Fly safe out there.